तद्ब्रह्म परमं शुद्धं सतां वत्म सनातनं विघार्य यथा पाषण्डं दैवं यो यत्र भूतरात्। गुड टू वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन। तत् दैट ब्रह्म वेद परमं सुप्रीम शुद्धम प्योर सताम ऑफ द सेंटली पर्सन्स वत्म पात सनातनम इटर्नल विघर्या ब्लास्फेमिंग यथा सॉरी याता शुड गो पाषंडम टू एथीसम दैवम डेटी वाह योर यात्रा वेर भूतरात द लॉर्ड ऑफ द भूतास। ट्रांसलेशन एंड परपोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस श्रील प्रभुपाद। बाय ब्लास्फेमिंग द प्रिंसिपल्स ऑफ द वेदास विच आर द प्योर एंड सुप्रीम पाथ ऑफ द सेंटली पर्सन्स सर्टनली यू फॉलोअर्स ऑफ भूतपति लॉर्ड शिवा विल डिसेंड टू द स्टैंडर्ड ऑफ एथीइज्म विदाउट अ डाउट। परपोर्ट। Lord Shiva is described here as Bhutarat, the ghosts and those who are situated in the material mode of ignorance are called Bhutas. So Bhutarat refers to the leader of the creatures who are in the lowest standard of material modes of nature. Another meaning of Bhuta is anyone who has taken birth or anything which is produced. So in that sense, Lord Shiva may be accepted as the father of this material world. Here, of course, Bhrigumuni takes Lord Shiva as the leader of the lowest creatures. The characteristics of the lowest class of men have already been described. They do not bathe, they have long hair on their heads, and they are addicted to intoxicants. In comparison with the path followed by the followers of Bhutarat, the Vedic system is certainly excellent, for it promotes people to spiritual life as the highest eternal principle of human civilization. If one decries or blasphemes the Vedic principles, then he falls to the standard of atheism. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namasute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Srimad Bhagavatam begins, the narration begins with the curse of a Brahmana, where Maharaj Parikshit is cursed, and the action Maharaj Parikshit takes after he gets the curse, that is an extraordinary step where he could have contracted the curse, but he decided not to, and that brings out the saintly nature of Maharaj Parikshit, even though he acted improperly by putting a snake on the neck of the sage, and the sage's son the name of the Brahmana, son who cursed Maharaj. Samika, yeah. So, Maharaj Parikshit could have contracted the curse, but he said, okay, this is the right opportunity for me to get out of my worldly entanglement. Now, if we see, it is the same Maharaj Parikshit who was saved by Lord Krishna in the womb when the Brahmastra was targeting him. This time, we can ask, okay, if Lord Krishna had protected him earlier, why didn't he protect now? So, for Bhagavatam to be spoken and for the purpose of glorifying and bringing out the significance of a person who is about, what is a person supposed to do when he is in a precarious situation and everyone faces the inevitable death, what should a person do at the time of death, how should you conduct himself, what should he be hearing, all these topics are brought out. So that same Maharaj Parikshit who could tolerate the burning of the Brahmastra could not tolerate the thirst for drinking water. How do we understand? It's the Lord's pastime where he is putting his devotees through a certain situation, and this time he decides not to protect Parikshit because he knows that Parikshit will be saved eventually, because he is going to hear the entire Srimad Bhagavatam and he is also going to be the medium through which the Bhagavatam is going to be spoken, and he is going to inquire further and further. And because Srimad Bhagavatam is the next step of Bhagavad Gita, where Bhagavad Gita we learn that we are not this body, we are spirit soul, soul never dies, soul cannot be cut to pieces, not be weathered by wind. So, with that ultimate knowledge, then we also see in the Vedas, in the Bhagavad Gitas, how the concept of Vedas is explained, where there are certain sections in the Vedas which encourage people to fulfill their material desires. So, I've taken birth in this world, so I need to live in this world. And while I'm living, to make my life comfortable, what do I have to do? So Krishna describes, so I've sent demigods and then the path of sacrifice. And once you satisfy the demigods with those sacrifices and with the cooperation of demigods and you, and by the performance of sacrifice, you will get rain and so on. He describes all that. Later on, Krishna also advises Arjuna that don't be too much caught up in this worldly things where you're comfortable with this material world and you want to live here forever. Don't be caught up in that. And he describes how some sections of the Vedas are described as the flowery words of the Vedas. Prabhupada describes in the earlier purports of this section that the fragrance of the flower is also very limited. For a short time you get fragrance from the flower, and the honey in the flower, that's also has got short-lived. So you don't have to get too much attached thinking that that's the all-in-all. If a 10th grade student thinks that, okay, this is my life, end of life, so I don't have to study any further than my 10th grade. So that's not the actual standard. So we know that after 10th grade there's year 12, then there's bachelor's degree, master's and PhD. So a person who is not aware of it may think that this is my final goal and he may limit himself. So Krishna, even though he says that some sections in the Vedas are there for guiding people to be satisfied in this material world, and that's not all in all. You have to move on, and the purpose of human life is to achieve transcendence. And because Vedas are coming from Krishna, they are always pure. So, how do we understand this in context of today's verse is these curses which are spoken by Bhrigu. Again, the episode of cursing continues in the Bhagavatam. And this time we see a different episode of complex cursing and counter-cursing going on, where Shiva was blasphemed by Daksha and Daksha pronounces the first curse. He actually describes the various qualities of Shiva, but in a derogatory way. He even criticizes the appearance of Shiva and all that. He goes on. There's a whole list of that. Now, Bhagavatam is meant to glorify the devotees and the Lord. Now, why are we hearing such blasphemy? Now, previous canto, Lord Kapila spoke about devotional service and how devotional service can be performed in the three modes. Although the process of bhakti in itself is beyond the modes, depending on how the practitioner practices it, he could be doing it in the mode of ignorance, he could be doing it in the mode of passion, or he could be doing it in the mode of goodness. And this canto, fourth canto, begins with the example of a person who is worshipping the Lord, but is performing devotional service, but still he is influenced by the mode of ignorance. So, because Bhagavatam is like an extensive case study of different scenarios, it is also bringing out these scenarios in front of us, and we don't have to think that, okay, it is Daksha who is like that, okay, it is Nandishwara who is overcome by anger, and his Bhrigu is counter-cursing. These propensities, tendencies are inside us. While reading the episode, I can see so many of these characteristics are inside me and how personally I have committed many mistakes, offenses. The best part of Bhagavatam is that it also brings out the good side of a person later on. It also teaches us how to rectify the mistake. It's not that once you commit a mistake and for rest of the eternity you are damned. You have to reside in hell forever and burn there. No, the path of bhakti is that so powerful that even if a person occasionally commits a mistake and falls down, it's described you don't have to do any other kind of remedy. You just continue practicing bhakti. You don't have to do any other prayaschitta or atonement for that matter. You continue practicing bhakti, the process of bhakti is so powerful that it will counteract all those and it will bring out the good nature inside you. And that's what we are seeing in this episode. If we consider the entire episode as tying of different knots together, like so, Daksha sees Lord Shiva not getting up and offering him respects when everyone else is doing. And that's like the first trigger. That's a provoking situation. He could have he could have ignored it, or he doesn't have to blow it up to such an extent where he starts to feel angry and all the bad nature. He doesn't have to go into that side, but the first knot is there, so he gets into it. That's when he goes and he takes the wrong path of contemplating too much on the apparently bad nature of Lord Shiva. It looks as if he is in unclean place, he's not well dressed, and he has got his behavior is not good. So all that. Acharyas describe how every aspect which Daksha spoke on is they have given the other side also. How? So if he is living in a place which is not clean, he is there to even pick up people who are living in such lower modes. So, how do we understand this? The doctor is going to a hospital doesn't mean that the doctor is sick. The doctor is going there to cure patients, although a patient and the doctor might go to the same hospital. So the role of the doctor is that he is going there to cure. So Lord Shiva is so powerful that he can deal with creatures who are like ghosts and still be able to elevate them. So to be part of them, he takes up this kind of a role where he dresses up and his whole life. But internally, his meditation is always on Lord Vasudeva. That's what he will describe in a private conversation with his wife as to why he did not get up. Because he was always meditating on Vasudeva, who is the Paramatma deciding everyone's heart. He has already paid respect to Daksha by meditating on the Lord. He doesn't have to physically get up. So he explains it later on to Sati as to why he did not get up. So that's how we understand this scenario. So Daksha is kind of creating that first knot where he starts to speak, he starts to blaspheme, and he doesn't stop there, he gives a curse. So Prabhupada explains, even the curse is a kind of a blessing because Lord Shiva doesn't have to be part of those Vedic sacrifices where he has to be considered as one of the demigods and offer sacrifices and accept the sacrifices which are offered to demigods, because he is not a demigod. He has got his own tattva. Shiva tattva is distinct. Although for classification wise, sometimes he is classified as a demigod, but he has got his own category, Shiva tattva. So in that sense, Prabhupada says the curse is also a kind of a blessing. He doesn't have to partake in the offerings offered to the demigods. Now, the scenario is there. So if the scenario had stopped there, the more further knots would not have been there. So Daksha triggered that first knot. Then, naturally, when your master is being blasphemed, it's quite natural for a servant to get agitated. Now what we are doing is we are kind of tracing back the whole situation. It's just like in a video, if you play the whole thing back, so if people are moving forward, then if you reverse it back, it'll all go backwards. So what we are trying to do is replay this whole thing, whole scenario, and also apply the pause button at some situations and see what are the lessons that we can learn from the actions of that personalities, because we are not in the heat of things at the moment because the sacrifice is happening and Daksha is cursing and Nandishwara is cursing, then Bhrigumuni is counter-cursing. Now the whole scenario is happening, but we are in a position where we are able to see it as an observer, because they are all involved in it, they got into it. But by presenting it in Bhagavatam, what we are getting is, we are getting an observer's viewpoint, and when we reflect on it, we ourselves will be put in those situations sometimes in our lives. So coming back to Nandishwara, it's natural for a servant to get agitated when his master is blasphemed. So now, what is the correct action? Instead of waiting for his master or taking approval from his master or just expressing his concern, he took a step forward and he also started to curse. He also started to curse the Brahmana. So that's like the kind of second knot where the things are going forward in a wrong direction and it is going further and further away. Ultimately, it is meant to be a sacrifice, it is meant to please Vishnu. That is what the whole scenario is. But as you see, things are going in the wrong direction. Now, Nandishwara, instead of cursing, if he had the ability to look at all the words of Daksha, he can refute all the descriptions which he spoke about Lord Shiva. So in the lives of Goswamis, we see this pastime where Rupa Goswami was challenged by one of the pandits, and Rupa Goswami wasn't quite keen in refuting. He was involved in a higher purpose, so he doesn't like, I don't have time to go all this, so you want this, so I'll accept defeat and then I'll write it and give it to you. You claim that you have won me, so I don't care, I'm not involved in all these petty things. But Jiva Goswami took it up on his head that, okay, no, it is an insult to my spiritual master, so I will not tolerate it. So he counter argues with this pandit and he defeats him. So, but still the Rupa Goswami wasn't happy. I believe there was some kind of Jiva Goswami was asked to leave Vrindavan or something like that happened. I don't know the details. But the principle that I'm pointing to is Jiva Goswami actually did not curse this pandit, or he actually went into the point of philosophically defeating this person. So Nandishwara, because his master was blasphemed, he could have taken the same opportunity to counteract each and every point which Daksha spoke on and glorify Lord Shiva, then actually bring out that and express the point that he wasn't quite happy with the way Daksha had spoken. And he could have even expressed the point that where Daksha should not have spoken in that way for a person of his caliber. This is when I felt the purports or the commentaries of the Acharyas are coming to very handy in seeing how every word spoken by Daksha against Lord Shiva can be taken in a positive way. One of them, Daksha says, is Lord Shiva is shameless, which means he is niraptarappaha, shameless. So Nandishwara could have contracted saying that Lord Shiva is so famous that he even maintains those people who are without a shelter. Who would go and reside in a crematorium? Those who don't have a shelter. But Lord Shiva is so glorious that he goes and elevates them. When Daksha says that Shiva destroyed the fame of all the Lokapalas because he doesn't follow the gentle manners, Nandishwara could have contracted by saying that because Lord Shiva is so famous, the other Lokapala's fame, that gets diminished because Lord Shiva is so glorious. Not that he brings ill fame to the other Lokapala's. He is so famous that others' fame is being brought down. So when Daksha says that Shiva is looking like a monkey-eyed person, it's a very crude remark. And somehow Daksha said, because Brahma asked me to give my wife, my daughter, I had to give my daughter to him. Otherwise, I would not have given. So Acharya is right, and Nandishwara could have said, Shiva mercifully grants the desires of monkey-like materialists. Even though you are like a monkey and asking for this and that, Shiva is so merciful that he can grant the wills of the desires of such materialists. And it's a good fortune that you got your daughter married to such an auspicious person. So in this way, we can see how the act of Nandishwara's curse could have been turned into an act of glorifying Lord Shiva and refuting what all he had spoken and expressing his dissatisfaction towards the action of Daksha and not actually cursing the person Daksha and cursing the Brahmanas and decrying the Vedic scriptures. That's what Nandishwara went on to do. So he cursed the Brahmanas and then he said, because you are too attached to the some sections of the Vedas, you'll always be attached to getting food in whatever way, shape or form. So he gave a list of curses. That could have been prevented. At the same time, he could have achieved his objective of expressing his anger and dissatisfaction towards the words spoken by Daksha to his master and not pronouncing a curse. So in that way, he could have prevented the second knot being put in the complex situation. So he went ahead and did that. Now, because again, as we see, the scenario is going the wrong direction. Now, because Brahmana is still a material bodily designation, that's why we see when we do worship, we say, I'm not a Brahmana, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a Shudra, I'm not a Kshatriya. I'm simply a servant of the servant. Gopi Bharata Pada Kamalayor, Dasa Dasanu Dasa. If a person is in that consciousness, he would not have been provoked because, okay, Nandishwara spoke up against or cursed the Brahmanas. Okay, if I am not completely in my bodily consciousness, I would not have taken it so seriously. Okay, it was a mistake. Daksha spoke like that and the Brahmanas also kept quiet. Now, Bhrigu, instead of again complicating the situation, he could have pacified Nandishwara and accepted the mistake for keeping quiet when words are spoken against an exalted person. And we see this when Bhishma Dev and Dronacharya, they kept quiet and they did not take action when Draupadi was getting disrobed. They had to face the reactions for that. So, what do we do when such scenario is happening? That will be demonstrated by Lord Shiva in the next verse. What does he do when two or three parties of Vaishnavas are fighting with each other? What is the best course of action when such clash is going on? Shiva will demonstrate what needs to be done. That will be covered in the next verse. So, at this point, when Bhrigu is starting to look at the situation, again he is complicating the situation by putting the third knot by the scenario of, okay, you said this to us and now all the followers of Lord Shiva, you will become this. And he goes on to give the, he pronounces another curse. So, by this, if you see, the initial objective with which they started the whole yajna is to please Vishnu. And now what have they? They have gone really, really, really way off the track. So blasphemy of Vaishnava was done. Then the Brahmanas are cursed. The Vedic scriptures are being decried. Now, many of you are familiar with the 10 offenses. Now, what are the offenses that we recite that are being committed here? Can somebody tell? We recite daily the 10 offenses. Bahu janma kariyadi shravana kirtana. First, what is it? Yeah, so who is doing that blasphemy in this scenario? Yeah, so we see, so that is the first one. And then also we have another offense against the holy name, which is blaspheming the Vedic literatures or literatures in persons of Vedic version. Who is committing that offense here? Who is decrying the Vedic scriptures in this scenario? Nandishwara, yes. So we don't have to see that, okay, he is committing the offense, so we could also be doing it. The whole point is, as an observer, look at this whole scenario and how do I take lessons from this and apply it in my life. Now, why is it that if I blaspheme the Vedas, it is going to offend the holy name? Why is it like that? Chant, but holy name is beyond the Vedas, right? What is the connection between the holy name and blaspheming Vedas?
Holy name is the same as Holy name is conclusion of all.
Oh, good, yes. Because where do we see this verse, Harer Nama, Harer Nama, Harer Nama eva kevalam, kalau nasti eva nasti eva nasti eva gatir anyata. So, Vedas, even though they have a certain section like Karma Kanda, which promote the worship of the demigods and may even induce the people to consider the demigods as supreme, still there is an aspect of transcendence involved. Actually, Varun asked me a question the other day about the demigod worship, and then I had the opportunity to go through some of the prayers that they offer to Lord Ganesh during Ganesh Puja. And when I was objectively analyzing them, and towards the end of that worship, they start Achyutam Keshavam Ramana Rayanam. They sing that, and they sing another important verse, which many of them, even personally, I didn't know it is coming from Srimad Bhagavatam itself. Kayena vacha manasendriyarva buddhyatvanava prakrute svabhava karoti yat yat sakalam parasmai narayanayeti samarpayam. In the Ganesh Puja, after glorifying Lord Ganesh, towards the end, what are these people chanting without even knowing what is the meaning is, whatever I do by body, mind and words, at the end I am offering it to Narayana. So when after that they sing Achyutam Keshavam Ramana Rayanam, and then towards the end Hare Krishna mantra will appear.
Yes.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You are familiar with that? Yeah. Now, even though it is a demigod worship, without they knowing what they are saying the name of Lord Narayan, they are saying the name of different incarnation, Achyutam Keshavam. When I ask them, do you actually know the meaning of what you are selling? No, it's just part of the ritual, it's there, we say it, that's it. So, when they themselves, as an observer, they were seeing these prayers and they understood, okay, so why is it that when we are worshipping Lord Ganesh, this whole scenario is there, and that is why following even demigod worship has the advantage in that sense. If the worship of Vishnu is included in some way, shape or form in the Vedic literatures, even though you are induced to worship the demigods, some part of worship of Vishnu is also done, even though you may not be conscious of it. Even for performing Archaman, I don't know how it is done with the other worship, like we do Keshavaya, Narayana, all that. So, even if you want to worship demigods, you start to purify yourself. How do you purify yourself is by this. And when it comes to South India, we have this Shuklam, Bharadaram, Vishnam, Shashivarnam, Sadurpujam, Prasanna Vadanam, Dhyayet, Sarva Vikno, Prashanti. And usually, I had the impression that it indicates Lord Ganesh. But if you analyze the meaning of it, and whenever any worship begins, we say Suklam Bharadaram. It is very, very like we are spontaneously that will come because of before we start the worship, we worship Lord Ganesh because he removes the obstacles. But actually, if you analyze Suklam Bharadaram, what do you say after that? Vishnu. Sadur Pujam. Who has got Sadur Puja? Vishnu. Prasanna Vadanam. Describing the beauty. Dhyayet. So if you think of Lord Vishnu in the beginning, he removes all the obstacles. Okay, I don't have to go into too much complexity. Even the word Om indicates, what does Krishna say? I am that particular syllable. So any worship of demigods, you will say the word Om. And where is Om coming from? That is coming from the Vedas. And where are the glories of the holy name described? That's described in the Vedas. Srimad Bhagavatam, where is it fitting? It is fitting in the Vedas. So that is why we are not meant to blaspheme the Vedic literature. And that is why it is an offense against the holy name. Because the person Krishna and the holy name Krishna are non-different. And if you are blaspheming the words spoken by Krishna in the form of Vedic literature, that is again, you are committing an offense against the holy name. And this holy literature, it describes the glories of various devotees also. It describes the glories of how Krishna treats the Brahmanas. Say, if a government servant is committing a mistake, I may properly lodge a complaint, but I cannot go and attack the government servant. So, okay, Nandishwara has, okay, so some Daksha has spoken about something, but I don't have to go to the extent of criticizing the Vedic literature. I could have stopped at counteracting the words spoken by Daksha and respected the Vedic literature and not gone into that path. Okay, so now the blasphemy of Vedic literature is committed. What is the rectification then? How do we rectify the mistake? This His Holiness Mahanidhi Maharaj, he writes in his book where he describes every offense and then he describes every rectification for every offense. Supposedly, if a person has blasphemed the Vedic literature, what is he supposed to do as a rectification? He has to worship the worship Srimad Bhagavatam. So he has to get a set of Srimad Bhagavatam. If you don't have one, please get one. So then, so place it on an altar. Offer boga, tulasi, everything as you worship the Lord. Worship Srimad Bhagavatam. Offer all kind of respects to Srimad Bhagavatam. Circumambulate Srimad Bhagavatam. And glorify, speak the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. In that way, you counteract the offense of blaspheming the Vedic literature. So, this is the corrective action one needs to take if one has gone into the path of committing an offense or committing the offense of blaspheming the Vedic literature. So, in this way, if you are able to see this episode from an observer's point of view, a lot of bad qualities that are inside us, we can see, okay, we don't have to look down upon Daksha or Nandishwara or Bhrigu. They are all exalted personalities. And the purpose with which they are doing the yajna was good, although they got sidetracked. And second thing that we can learn is, instead of counteracting a curse with a curse, a blasphemy with further blasphemy, you may lose track of the actual purpose. Instead of that, you objectively dismantle, or you actually speak against the actions of the person and express your dissatisfaction of what is spoken and not have any anger or hatred towards the person himself. So the person and his actions are separate. So that's why we say hate the sin, not the sinner. So in that sense, we are expressing our emotions, but we are doing it in a proper way. And if our master is criticized, we counteract the criticism, but we don't go overboard and create a bigger mess. And the way Lord Shiva conducts himself, that's it is setting an example. as to what should be done. When personally Daksha was telling so many things, Shiva tolerated. It's very hard to do that when we are in those provoking situations. But it takes practice. And Prabhupada in the earlier purport writes that those who are not strong, they get easily agitated. And it was very applicable to me. When I get agitated so many times, it means that I am not personally strong. Prabhupada is not mentioning about physical strength, like you build your body, then you will not be moved by others. No, he's talking about spiritual strength. If you are spiritually strong, then we know that we are so insignificant. Then even if somebody is speaking something against us, we'll be able to tolerate it. And that spiritual strength comes from our sadhana. So, the point about Lord Shiva conducting himself, so he tolerated all the blasphemy against him because he was strongly fixed in his meditation on Lord Vasudev. Throughout the whole episode is happening, he was meditating, although he knew, okay, such externally he is aware of what's happening, but internally he is meditating on the Lord, and he walks out of the scene. That's what he will do. Now one may ask, why such a person like tolerant Lord Shiva, why did he create another, Lord Shiva is the one who created Veerabhadra and ordered him to go and kill Daksha. Why did he do that? He could have tolerated that also, right? Now what had transpired is Mother Sati leaves her body because of the actions of Daksha. A person in a very high position, like Daksha is a Prajapati. Prajapati means he has to take care, not only produce progeny, but he also has to protect the progeny. King not only has to protect the citizens, but every living being in the kingdom. Prabhupada describes in his lecture to the Bhagavad Gita, first chapter verses, as to how Dhritarashtra was not fit to be a king because he was favoring his sons over the sons of Pandu. A king means he has to be equipoised and he has to give protection to all of them. And here we see Daksha, he is not even preventing his daughter from killing herself. And what sort of... So again, we should not look down upon Daksha. He has got he's in an exalted position. So, as a result of his inaction, Sati dies. Now, as a duty, it is a duty of a husband to protect the wife, and that's what Lord Shiva tried. He prevented her from going. He told all the consequences. Despite that, she went. And so, it's natural for a husband to get angry when the wife is killed in such a scenario. And the same thing we can see as to why Lord Ram also got angry when Mother Sita was kidnapped. He could have thought, okay, Sita is gone, I can leave, I'm already Atmarama, I can leave like that, no wife, no problem. No, no, corrective action has to be taken. So, Shiva, he creates another, he creates Veerabhadra, and now he is ordering Veerabhadra to kill Daksha. Whereas here, Shiva did not order Nandishwara to speak against Daksha. Because Shiva is keeping quiet. And even if you have to speak, you get the permission from Shiva and then speak just to counteract whatever you've spoken. So if Shiva is keeping quiet and you are there and you are getting the blasphemy, so it's better to leave. So that's how we understand then why did Daksha had to be killed, because Lord Shiva later on describes when the demigods go and pacify him and tell, see, demigods are like my children, I need to correct them. So one type of punishment is what the government imposes to a criminal, but the other type of punishment is when a parent chastises the child. That's also a type of punishment. When the children are going off track, they need to be corrected. So Shiva says, the demigods are like my children, and when they are offending me, it's okay. But here it's gone to a point where another devotee, Mother Sati, is also a devotee of the Lord. So another devotee has lost her life, which means corrective action has to be taken. So in that sense, I ordered this. So based on Lord Brahma's request, he will partially agree to fulfill the, he will not completely forgive them. So that's why Bhrigu's mustache will be torn and all that will happen later. And Daksha will not get his original head back, he will get a goat's head. So there will be some amount of punishment and also some amount of mercy involved. That's how we see why Lord Shiva was tolerating everything when it is spoken against him. But the same Lord Shiva, he took the corrective action and created Virabhadra to kill Daksha when Mother Sati was affected by the whole thing. So that's how we understand the actions of the exalted personalities, because it's very hard to understand why Vaishnavas are acting in a certain way at certain scenarios. It says Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigyana Pujaya. So yeah, so we are mindful of this I'm speaking to myself in terms of not being misjudging others' action on a particular scenario. And even if you have to express something, you have to express it in a way that doesn't condemn the person, but just their actions. So I'll stop there and see if there are any questions. Yeah, so Bhagavatam Puja is not an atonement, still you are actually.
What is the question?
The question is that initially, if you are falling off track from the path of bhakti, you don't have to do separate atonement, you still continue practicing bhakti. That itself is the process is so powerful that it will take care of counteracting the mistakes that you have done. So his question is, now if you have blasphemed the Vedic literatures, there is a rectification for it. Now how do we understand that? So the rectification again is not from Karmakanda section or Jnanakanda section, because worshipping and glorifying Bhagavatam is also bhakti process only. Well, if you see the five potent forms of devotional service, one of them is hearing Bhagavatam. So the rectification process also is part of bhakti. So my point is, you don't have to do a separate karma kanda atonement if you have fallen down from the path of bhakti. So you do continue following the process of bhakti. Obviously there are specific. So if you blaspheme a Vaishnava, you go and ask forgiveness from a Vaishnava. It's not that you continue chanting the holy name, the offense against Vaishnava will be neutralized. No, it's not like that. But glorifying Vaishnava is also a part of devotional service. What we are saying is, you blaspheme Vaishnava and then you go to one Karmakanda section of Veda, there is an atonement, so you can do that and continue blaspheming the Vaishnavas. No, we don't tell that. So this is the thing. So you glorify the Vaishnava. So Vaishnava glorification is also part of devotional service. That's how we understand. Anyone wants to add to that? No? Yeah.
What happens if you unknowingly offend Vaishnava? And there's normally remedies unknowingly
if we blaspheme a Vaishnava. Okay. Sorry, not blaspheme. You have offended a Vaishnava.
Yeah.
One thing I've heard of is the morning of when we, after Tulsi Puja, we offer our respectful obeisances to all the Vaishnavas. At that time, you, in your consciousness, you can feel that, okay, knowingly, unknowingly, I might have committed offenses to the devotees, so I'm begging forgiveness for that also. It's not like a mundane routine that we're doing. Internally, if we have that, then possibly serving the devotees, you may feel that you might have offended. If you know some specific person or somebody, you can directly ask them, things like that. But unknowingly, if you have done, so this is one of them. Third aspect is by seeing your spiritual progress. If it's getting stagnated, you can pray to the Lord to give you the memory of who you might have offended. So the Lord, being merciful, will reveal to you, you might have, in this scenario, unknowingly you have done this. Or by reading a section of Bhagavatam, then you reflect on, am I doing such things to others unknowingly? So by praying to the Lord, by reflecting, by reading Srimad Bhagavatam sections and reflecting on our own activities, and then, so then you know that, okay, this, we might have done an offense, so then we approach the person and ask for forgiveness. Yeah, that help. Yes, is a comment or question?
Question.
Okay.
This first time when Daksha is operating with Lord Shiva.
Yes,
there's no mention of Sati being there in the area. Was she there? Why there?
No, yeah, so it's a good question. Sati was not there in the scenario when Daksha cursing was happening. So, so there are two separate. So when this when the enmity between Lord Shiva and Daksha is being described, so the questions are like, why did the original question is, why did Sati did not have a child? And the answer to that is, Sati died prematurely. Then why did Sati die prematurely? Because there was an enmity between Lord Shiva and Daksha. And why was there an enmity between Lord Shiva and Daksha? So when Daksha initially conducted a yajna, at that time this happened. So Shiva did not get up, and then Daksha curses. Then Daksha will, down the line, he will conduct one more yajna where he will not invite Lord Shiva purposefully. And all the other demigods will be invited, and at that time Sati will be seeing all the demigods going to the yajna of Lord Shiva dressed up nicely. And so womanly nature, she also wanted to dress up and go. And
first time Sati is not
there. Second time only, when that yajna happens, at that time only, she'll be advised not to go, and Sati will be caught up in this dilemma, and she'll decide she'll go anyway. Yes. And that's what happens. Yeah, so she's there in the second one. She should have been there in the first time. Well, I cannot answer that. Yeah, so if you want the clarity of the picture, that's what I gave. Why she wasn't there?
Sometimes
I have no idea.
It's kind of surprising. I would expect her to be there in the first time too.
Hmm.
Anyway.
Hare Krishna. We'll conclude here. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Samaveta Bhaktavrinda ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.